Hi, I'm Ali Portee, fashion and lifestyle journalist and editor of Zayla magazine. I've always been interested in biographies and in the stories of people's lives, basically listening to what stirs their souls. Welcome to the Soulful Side of Life, where I let you in on some of my conversations with inspiring people from around the world in fashion, faith, entertainment, music, and entrepreneurship. These are conversations that stir the soul about people's journeys, about the ups and downs of life, and how they have overcome certain situations. I hope that these episodes will inspire your life in some way, so enjoy over a cup of something hot or on your drive to work. This is The Soulful Side of Life and can be found on Spotify Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. So this podcast episode is raw and it's real and it's with Hen Coulter Abrams, and she lives in a kibbutz in Israel, the Kfar Aza kibbutz, and her kibbutz was deeply affected on October 7th when Israel was attacked by Hamas, and five people from her kibbutz are part of the 132 still hostages under Hamas siege, and several have been killed. She wasn't there at the time. She was visiting her sister in Portugal, but her aunt's house is completely burned to the ground. She opens up about that. I found when I first met Hen to be very open and caring and empathetic to her neighbors in Hamas territory and in Gaza. And I don't find that has changed per se. There is a wound there and there is pain there, but I don't find bitterness in her. She just wants the 132 hostages brought back. She opens up about what she's feeling, what her kibbutz experienced, and how people can help moving forward as Israelis and Jews around the world try and find a way to move forward, even in the midst of many people still being held hostage. So enjoy this podcast episode. I would also like to add, I would be happy to speak with somebody who knows and understands the Palestinian side of things and how they are feeling. My heart is open to both sides. So enjoy this podcast episode with Chen. So Chen, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
And thank you, Ali, for having me today.
My pleasure. So you and your countrymen have been through a lot the past months. And I think today, wasn't it in Israel that the country paused to remember those who were killed in the Holocaust? I think I saw something online. So
yeah.
So it's just a reminder that Jewish people have been through a lot. over the past plus century, I mean, even just centuries, going back centuries, how do you as a Jewish woman, I don't know if you're secular or not, but how do you carry on, go through life knowing that your people have been through a lot for centuries?
Well, first of all, since October 7th, so I have to say that my thoughts are mainly on survival mode. I'm left thinking on the wide aspect of things. But this morning when we had the siren to remember the 6 million Jews who perished who was killed during the Holocaust, I was standing on my porch, which is overlooking our alone here with all the worries. Also, the armory of the kibbutz, where some of my best friends from our first responded unit were killed in battle, really outside my house, literally. And I was posing there, standing, looking at the lawn when they were killed on October 7th, and I was thinking to myself, first I felt lots of sadness, and secondly, I really, brought their image to my mind, and the great human being that they were, and hoped that it wasn't for vain. That the death meant something. These people, they protected my community, they protected my family on October 7th, and I felt like honoring them, posing today in silence for 1 minute.
Yeah, for sure. And on that day, October 7th, at your kibbutz, which is super close to the border with Hamas, right? Is that the best way to describe it? It's very close to Gaza,
It's a
or
mile from the Green Line. The Green Line is the border between Gaza and Israel. So yes, it's very, very close.
very, very close. Yeah. So what was it like on that day? I know you weren't there, right? You were visiting family outside of Israel.
Yes, I went to, yes.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead on.
So I went to visit my sister who lives in Portugal, but all my family was here. Three siblings and nine nephews and nieces, and my dad and my cousins and the children and all my friends, most of my friends and my neighbors.
And what was it like for them that day?
It was very, very tough.
Yeah.
They were under, for example, my youngest sister, she had Hamas terrorists in her house, shooting, trying to break the secure room door where she was hiding with 11 people, four adults and eight children, for hours, for over 12 hours until they were rescued. And a lot of people around my sister's house were murdered and brutally murdered and kidnapped to Gaza, and some of them are still hostage in Gaza. My dad was by himself most of the time. He was he had terrorists in his house. At a certain point, he left the house, going and meeting soldiers that were outside his house and asking them to that he will take them to my sister so he can save her. He was we had no communication with him. He after 21 hours in a secure room, they said the military saved him, the IDF saved him. And my other sister, they started to burn her house. And only around 2 a.m. Again, over 20 hours after it started, they rescued her family. In my neighborhood, my next door neighbor was killed. Then the neighbor just on the house opposite mine, married to my best friend who grew up with me, was killed. Another neighbor with her caregiver was killed. Another one was killed. It's a loss beyond words. It's really 64 people were killed in my were murdered in Kibbutz Kfar Aza, in my community.
It's I don't even know what to say, because it's 2024, and I know that there's atrocities in the world happening, but what happened to Israel on that day is unacceptable, and it's numbing and shocking, and I can see on your face, it's hard to talk about. It was so close to your home. I remember you saying when I met you that you seem to have this empathy as well for the people living in Gaza, that You were talking about their mothers there, like there's mothers in my kibbutz. There's, people who have every day the concerns that you may have in your kibbutz or other people in your kibbutz. People in Gaza will have that. They just want care and safety and so on for their families. But yet, human nature and conflicts are far more complicated than people being able to live peaceably, especially in the part of the world where you live. Do you still feel that sort of empathy for women and children in Gaza?
I have to say that, when it just happened, I was raging. I felt deceit. I felt that somebody, that I lived in lie. And I remember one of the daughters of a friend who was murdered. She also very liberal in her point of view in life. And she came to me and she says, "Chen, do you think the same? Do you think we can think the same after something like that, after what happened to my dad, to our friends?" And I told her that I'm locking my thoughts and my feeling in a little box, and I will, open them, reopen them when it will be the right time. And I want to say to you, Ali, that I didn't overview every aspect of my political concept, my ideologies, but I do know one thing, that I've been living under rockets, under fire. This is how I raised my kid from 2001. It's 2024. No rocket, no bombs, no airplane, no tank, no terrorists solved the situation. It's like it continued to escalate until it came to the ultimate escalation, which is October. Atrocities happened in my kibbutz. Atrocities, things that you wouldn't think that a human being will do to a fellow. But I know that fighting all these years didn't lead us to a good place. It led us to here, to all this pain that we're having. So for me, I still think that we will somehow will have to find ways to live next to each other. You see, I don't want to meet them for coffee. I don't want to do any like nice project together, women to women. No, I don't talk about this thing. I'm just talking about the minimum, the basic needs, living next to each other, two nations that each one will be safe enough to raise their children peacefully. This is what I want. No need to like each other. And on this, I'm not giving up. It's not the right time, though.
To talk about.
It's not the right time. But I believe that it's the only way. And one day we will get there. I hope it will be in my lifetime.
I when I have watched some stories on YouTube of even some of the hostages that were released, I wonder, are there psychological counseling for them? Is that the case in your kibbutz, that there's been help for people to talk out what they the trauma they feel?
Yes, I think a lot of the people is doing therapy and is receiving therapy. I think a lot also have before, because of the rocket fire that we've been living under for so many years. Honestly, I think, and this is also what I heard from therapy professionals, what happened on October 7th is not in the books. I mean, they like had to reinvent the support they're giving to people, the psychological support, because there's nothing like that in the books for the situation like this. And honestly, I'm spending most of my days in the kibbutz already. I'm between the handful of people that are staying here. And this is not something you recover from. This is not pain that is going away. I mean, everywhere I look, I see my dead friends. I think it's more something that eventually you find way to live next to it. And I'm not there. Honestly, I'm not there yet.
And you're staying. You're not going to leave.
I left for several months, and then the apartment somebody was very gracious to give me. They came back to Israel, and I have to give the apartment back. And then I slowly, slowly started to walk my garden again, and then to sleep here, one night there. And eventually, I said that with all the fear of staying here,
Yeah.
I prefer to face my fear and be here. It just it doesn't. I mean, at my whole house, I don't feel like it's my home, but it's the closest to what I have.
Yes.
But I'm grateful because my house has very few gunshots. Meaning,
Okay.
you can continue stay there. And I don't have young kids because it's not a place for children, so I can be here. My aunt's house, for example, is burned to the ground, to the ground.
Wow.
So there's some people are not as lucky as I am that they can go to the, they don't even have a house to go there.
Right. It can't be easy. If people are leaving, are they going to other parts of Israel, or they have a second passport and they're leaving the country from your kibbutz?
More than half of my community is in hotel in the center of Israel.
Okay.
And other people, like my family, we're like nine households here. So we're like independently evacuated. We're just living in different places. My family is spread all over. And sometimes at the end of summer, between August to October or November, so whoever can and want for my community, they will go to like a temporary site, a caravan site, not far from our regional school, so the kids can go back to school in their old school. And this is where they will stay until the kibbutz will be finished the process of rebuilding. You see, 40% of our infrastructure is gone, need to be rebuilt.
Yeah. And
And then
how did that happen? Because a kibbutz is independent, right? Every kibbutz has its way of income. So that means it's up to the people in that kibbutz to pay for the buildup, or does the government give some funds for each kibbutz affected?
sorry about that.
Okay.
The government is made a plan for the rehabilitation of the whole perimeter of the community surrounding the Gaza border, and but the budget has not 100% approved, and also the budget that was approved apparently is not enough to renovate all these houses or rebuild them. So it's a very, very, it's a very big issue. There's still a lot of discussion about that. We have a committee in the kibbutz that deals only with that because it's huge monies. It's not something that an individual family can take care of itself.
I see.
And like I said, some of the people, we have people here 8 years old, 85 years old, their house is gone. I mean, all the property in life is burned to the ground. And sometimes also their family members. So they have like to restart in their age. And so hopefully eventually the government will give the budget an honorable budget, a budget that will all the people needs and will help them rebuild their homes and their life.
Of course, of course. I'm not this isn't a question, it's just me sharing my thoughts. I was after the October 7th attack, I was in the Arab world, and this guy was saying how he and his friends were watching on Telegram, a social media platform, those terrorists going into homes and terrorizing Israelis. And I didn't sense from him like even a hint of this was horrible to even be watching on social media. I felt more like he had this pride to watch it. And that's so heartbreaking to see. My mom had a snake on her porch last week and it scared me. I was sitting there rocking, and I don't like snakes. But I was reminded that in the animal kingdom, even the most poisonous of snakes and awful of animals that can cause a lot of pain don't tend to attack unless they feel threatened. And humans are far more brutal than snakes, venomous snakes, even the things that we do to one another. And that just did something to me in my heart when he was just telling me, as if he went to the cinema to watch a movie, like it was nothing. And I think you have to check in your heart, even if it's a group of people that you don't like, because there is this tension between certain types of Arabs and Jews. This guy, his grandparents had a store in Tel Aviv, and I guess the complications, they had to leave. So, okay, he's going to have some feeling in his heart about Israel. But these are humans at the end of the day, and we have to look in our hearts to realize these are humans, and these were innocent humans that had nothing to do with the state of Israel being founded, or, Palestine not being called Palestine anymore, and the complications of that. And I just, it's a reminder to me when I encounter people that I don't like, I don't wish them dead. I don't wish them, to be massacred in any way. So that's just something that I wanted to say. And is there anything that people can still do outside of Israel, can give or help in any way?
Can I comment on what you just
Yes.
said about this, please?
Yes.
Before your question, so you see, I believe that what happened in my kibbutz and in our communities next to the Gaza border, so this is not just our catastrophe. As hard as it is, as horrifying as it is, really, it was brutal. It was no human being, I believe, can do or think or wish something like that. But this is not just my catastrophe or my community. This is not even just Israeli catastrophe, and this is not just even human. I think it's a human being catastrophe. And I know that there are people that deny that it ever happened. Well, I know my friends that were shot outside my house. It happened. But why I think this is humankind catastrophe, because what happened here, this is the new playbook for terror. This is terrorists now around the world studying this playbook, what happened here in my kibbutz, in the kibbutzim just like mine, and they are going to execute it somewhere, sometimes. And this is the most horrifying thing. And this is why I think when somebody looks and watch it as a video on Telegram or TikTok or somewhere else and say, ah, it's not nothing, and looks at it like if it was the Hunger Games or something, eventually it will turn against them. And we can never know when it will happen and where it will happen. And this is why for me it's so important to talk about it and to share the story and to have people in my kibbutz and show them around so they will see for their eyes the cruelty. And that it will never happen again to somebody else.
Yes, I agree. You have to keep talking about it, even though it's painful. And I'm just amazed that at college campuses around the US, the protest of, Palestinian sympathizers against Israel, it's just picking up that the University of Southern California had to cancel their graduation. Even the university I went to, George Washington University, they keep sending out emails to alumni because the protests are just getting stronger and stronger. Do you have any thoughts on how, since October 7th, this has affected the world and these college campuses?
You know, throughout the years, I met a lot of students in my home in the kibbutz, coming to learn how it is to live under rockets and under terror and raise up kids like this and dealing with the trauma. And sometimes I had very challenging conversation here. about people that are thinking you have no right to be here, or people that were thinking what you're doing to the Palestinians in the West Bank, in Gaza. But I have a feeling that a lot of the protesters, and really I'm being modest, I'm not on top of all the details of what's happening in the state. I'm very much concentrated about the pain of my family and my community. But it looks like it somehow went out of proportion. I mean, there's a lot of the things that are being said there are not based in on facts, on reality facts. For example, I live in a kibbutz that was established in 1957, and it was desert. There was no Palestinian village here. It's within the Green Line. The Green Line was declared by the UN. I mean, there was no Palestinian village I took in order to have my home built. No. And I think we talked about it in the past. I used to have like relationship and friendly relationship with Palestinians in Gaza and in other places. I see them absolutely as human beings. However, I think Hamas government is a fundamental, vicious government. It's not some romantic terror organization. It's a vicious government that prioritizes terror on the people's well-being. The hunger situation in Gaza, this is not the result of the policy of any other government, but the Hamas government. Hamas government for year prioritized terror, digging tunnels, building a post and buying ammunition and manufacturing ammunition upon welfare, education, sanitation, building proper roads in Gaza. Hamas government is from 2006. Many, many years that you can turn the boat and make Gaza into a blooming, into a prosperous piece of land. And for this, I'm not accountable. Hamas government is accountable. And somehow it feels that, at least again, I'm being modest from what I hear about the demonstration, this part is completely forgotten. The fact that in Hamas there are very capable people, smart people, they had lots of resources throughout the years, from the revenue, from their investment, from the international aid, from the UN, from the US, from the European Union. They could have done with it many, many things. They choose terror.
They could have done good things for their own people. Oh my goodness, this. And they can't be reasoned with, and that it's a whole complicated discussion because it's something that could be so simple that you're as a government you're supposed to care and guide and provide certain things for the people, but it seems that they are guided and motivated by other things which are not of peace and the betterment of their own people and the people that surround them. What can be what how can people outside of Israel, if they're still wanting to help in some way, how can they give back and help?
So I think first of all, to ask questions. Don't take things as granted. Especially when we talk about the demonstration and about the opposition. Another thing is to help us in any possible way to bring our hostages from Gaza. In Gaza, there's 132 hostages. Five of them are from my kibbutz. Four of them were taking 150 yards from where I'm sitting now. It could have been me. It could have been my son, my sister, my nephews and nieces, my dad. It's just by chance it's them. And we need to do whatever we can to bring them alive back to Israel. For my community, in many ways, we are still stuck at the seventh. We didn't move on. Because we have these people. You know, every Saturday we go to the rallies here, and I stand by one of our young adult female members. I stand by her mom for 6.5 months, and I have nothing to say to her. I don't even have words anymore. I just, every Saturday for 1, 2 hours, I stand by her and I just feel her enormous pain. So if you ask me how you can help, the main thing is help us bring our hostages back, to keep it all the time in the awareness and talk about it. This is people I know from the day they were born, and they were taking in their underwear, in their pajamas from the bed. The other thing is come see. Come see. Even the one of you that would disagree with what I said, I respect it. Come see. Sit with me on my porch. Let's talk. See things firsthand, feel things firsthand, and then make an opinion. And the third thing, of course, there's always the possibility to continue help us financially to rebuild the community. It's going to be a very, very big project. Help us with funding the therapy. But the most important thing, like I said, is first bring our hostages back home.
Of course. Wow. And it's still a sobering when you say 132 people are still being held hostage, and the world has in some way moved on with their everyday lives, and the news isn't talking about it as much. What is, do you know what the Israeli government or where talks stand at the moment for those 132 lives?
As far as I know, there was a deal. I'm like sigh because it's so painful, and it's like ups and downs all the time. On Saturday evening, we were hopeful that there's a deal that might move on, and then since last night, it looks like it's off the table again, and there's not going to be a deal. And this is how it is, like up and down for a few months already. I don't know. I'm telling you honestly, I would give anything I have to bring them here. I think this is my country moral obligation to bring our people back home. It's civilians that were taken literally out of their beds, out of their kitchens, and I believe that they have the obligation to bring them, and therefore I ask everybody's help to make it happen.
I hope that they get to come home. I can't imagine what they're going through, and then being freed, what they're going to deal with the rest of their lives, as well as their loved ones having to deal with. They'll be different people, but their families and friends want to see them again, and I hope that every one of them comes back. What a horrible situation. I don't know what to say because it's not, I just feel a pain in my heart. And I'm not unsympathetic to what the people of Gaza have been feeling the last years. But it's such injustice of what happened to Israel and your people. So I will continue to pray, and if I can help in any way, I surely will. And yeah, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And thank you so much for thinking of me and checking on me and not giving up on me. And I really value our conversation and your thoughts. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast episode and that you have found a soulful connection to the conversation. God bless you, and until the next episode, go bless somebody else.